From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in Sacramento, California in September of 2020. The event is the World Butchers Challenge, and the American team will be made up of 9 members. One of them is a Rochesterian named Kevin McCann. You might know Kevin as the owner and butcher of McCann's Meats in the city's South Wedge. The shop opened in 2015, and since then, Kevin and his team have become an institution in Rochester. They sell whole animals, which means he's limited by the Noah's Ark rule of animal butchery. There's only 2 of each cut of meat, but there's also kinds of meat that many of us don't really know about or appreciate. Kevin sources his meat locally. We're going to talk about what that means this hour, because there's no legal definition of local. And he agrees with the American team's statement about the upcoming butchers competition. The team believes that Americans are excited about better meat, better sources, and Americans in general are paying more attention to their food, where it comes from, the people who raise it, and the people who prepare it. This is our first in our Summer of Food series of conversations on Connections all summer long on Thursdays at 1 p.m. We'll talk about food and agriculture and trends and restaurants. And this hour, let's go inside the mind of a butcher, a man who brings us bulgogi and brisket and so much more. And he's a man who looks roughly half the size of the guy who I saw open shop 4 years ago. Kevin McCann, welcome to the back to the studio here. It's great to have you.
Appreciate to be back.
You're not quite half the size, but you're close.
Yeah, about a third, maybe. Yeah.
You've lost how much weight?
115 pounds.
115 since when?
About a year and a half ago. Yeah, about a year and a half.
Well, we will talk about your physical struggles, because I know you've had some back issues and surgeries.
True story.
And you wanted to drop some of the weight, especially because of how you felt. You're on your feet a lot. We'll get there. But I want to go back a little bit to the beginning, because you're a butcher who opened the shop in June of 2015, right?
Correct.
In Rochester, South Wedge. I called you an institution. How do you view yourself now?
Very lucky to be the recipient of so much support. We opened the shop with the belief in good food and the good food that is available all around within our community. And we're very, very fortunate that everybody else in Rochester seems to have agreed with us and bought into that.
Did anybody tell you that neat time to open a meat shop in a time when veganism's on the rise?
That may be the case, but I don't necessarily feel that
inside
my four walls.
It doesn't touch you.
No.
I will say this, you know, Kevin is it's not just Kevin behind the counter there. And everyone there knows so much about the animals and about what your customers want. We're going to get to different cuts. I mean, I think this will be a great educational hour for people when we think about the animals we consume and what a whole animal really means. But you didn't grow up with this in Chittenango, New York, did you?
No, I did not.
I was asking before the program, you come from a butcher's family? And you said...
No, I learned how to cook because I was hungry. My parents were awful cooks. My mother could burn boiling water if you let her. And quite honestly, I was also the guy that couldn't hold his lunch down while dissecting frogs in seventh grade. So the fact that I do what I do now is a big, big turnaround.
Okay, now that is a surprise to me. So you were squeamish about cutting up animals.
That's correct.
How do you change that?
You know, I think the first time I went with one of my mentors to an on-farm slaughter, and I was really nervous going into it. I really had no idea what to expect. I didn't know if I was going to react well to it. But Hans Siebold was the man's name, an Austrian man who had taught at the Culinary Institute of America. He was leading this educational class for other students that I was a part of. And he gave this speech beforehand. It wasn't religious in nature, but it was solemn. And he talked about the sacrifice that was going to take place with regards to, you know, an animal losing its life, and how it was important for all of us to understand that, to respect that, and to do our best to utilize that meat and everything that was there as fully as possible. And so right then and there, I sort of, in the middle of that activity, when I was holding on to organ meat that was still warm from life, I had this very, you know, eye-opening moment of, man, this is important. This is not just eating. This is not just, you know, cleavers and hooks and chains. This is important.
And how quickly did it wipe out your squeamishness? Did it do it right then and there?
Right then and there.
It really did.
Yeah.
I asked that because I wish I weren't squeamish. Mm. And yeah, I've got a 7-year-old son. So think about the 7-year-old kid. He's got a dad who is squeamish about blood and, you know, guts and everything.
Sure.
And a mom who is not. And I'm wondering, like, is the cake baked by the time you're 7, 8, 9 years old? Your evidence that you can actually become unsqueamish about stuff like that.
It meant something to me. When I went to the CIA to learn how to cook professionally, I had an idea of what food was, where food came from, even meat being a part of that. And getting into the meat fabrication room and sort of really delving into that subject and getting more and more excited about it and learning more and more as I was a student there. And then having this experience, it just, you know, it sort of overtook my entire psyche.
I'm actually very encouraged by that. That is fascinating to me. But you had to get on that path to begin with. And growing up in a family that didn't cook at all, did you become a good cook by the time you were in your teens or just sort of functional? Like, when did you become someone who can actually do stuff?
You know, one of my best friends growing up, I ended up at his house miraculously. I'm not even sure how. It's still a mystery to this day. I ended up at his house at dinner time, it seemed like every single day. And his mother recognized that. And, you know, as we graduated high school, as we went off into our lives, she had a family cookbook that her family had put together that she gifted to me. And that was, a symbolic thing to me. And it meant something. But I didn't really start cooking until far later. I kind of always enjoyed putting things together. I enjoyed going to the grill. I enjoyed taking care of friends when we got together. But it wasn't until really, you know, I graduated with my degree in theater and I went to New York and I was serving tables and
in theater?
Yeah.
That was your degree?
Yeah.
What did you want to do with it?
I really enjoyed directing. I enjoyed this aspect of taking all of these facets that it took to put a production together, the acting and the lights and the costumes and the props and the set and all of it. I enjoyed having a little bit of say in all of that and trying to bring all of that together into a coherent thought process. And so that's when I got to New York and I ended up serving tables at the Planet Hollywood in Times Square. And
like everybody ends up, or at least serving tables somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and it was a great experience. It was a real life moment. You know, New York City, B, serving tables there. And when I left New York and I was looking for work, I started serving tables again for a corporate restaurant. And really, serving tables, while I was good at it, it was tough on it was tough on my emotions, let's just say. So
why?
You may or may not know this about me. I have a little bit of a temper. And so, you know, customer service at that point may have been bad for a younger Kevin.
Did you have any incidents?
No, not in public. But
listen,
certainly
nobody's listening. You can tell us anything.
You know, back kitchen, server station, you know, there were some four-letter words. But so I started cooking part-time while I was within that restaurant and then made it through into the management program and started as a kitchen manager and didn't even realize how good of a time I was having, really didn't understand how good of an beginning education that was for me until I decided to take this seriously, realized that it was something I really did enjoy pouring myself into and then went to the Culinary Institute of America.
You act like you could just go to the CIA.
You know, it's there is a process to get in. It becomes increasingly easier to get in. But while you're there, no matter how easy it may or may not be to get in, the rigor of what is expected of you while you're there, you cannot avoid.
Oh, I've talked to many people. It's very rigorous.
Yes.
And you enjoyed it there?
Well, I also kind of had a different experience. I went as a 29, 30-year-old semi-adult. I had kind of been into the real world, experienced it a bit. So my experience going in was much different than an 18-year-old coming out of high school. where the CIA requires you to do some readings, some math. They're trying to put out leaders in the industry. They're not trying to just put out line cooks. So they want you to be able to communicate. They want you to be able to understand your own books and so on and so forth. So my going in there, having some real world in my back pocket, it was like summer camp, and to a lot, large degree, you know. And I kept telling that to some of the younger students, like, you know, this is fantasy camp. Wait till you get out into the real world. You have to actually do it, you know. It's an amazing, amazing opportunity.
That's interesting. And you even met a woman there.
Luckily, yeah. I had been through the program at this point, and I had started on as a teaching assistant in the meat room. And just in passing, had met my wife. We were friends and saw each other here and there and so on and so forth, but didn't really get to know each other extremely well until after I had left and she was on externship in New York City where I was working. And yeah, one thing led to another, and now we're married. We have two kids and a business.
How old are your kids?
5.5 and 2.5.
Are they squeamish?
I wouldn't call either of them squeamish.
I would think they can't be, right? I mean, it's just normalized being around.
I keep waiting for this day that I'm sure is going to happen where it'll be my son first where he says, "What do you mean you don't have hanging carcasses around all the time? I thought that was normal. Don't we all have that?"
Like in everybody's houses?
Yeah.
Hanging carcasses
yeah.
everywhere.
You don't eat steak every night? What?
Now, you do not butcher the actual, or you don't kill the animals. You don't slaughter the animals.
That's correct.
You butcher the animals.
That is correct.
Okay, see, look, the terminology.
Well done.
But your wife is Yanmo.
That's correct.
But everybody calls her Mo.
That's also correct.
Can you tell the listeners the story you told me about Mo and her family?
Yeah, so one of the great educational opportunities when you come into the shop is not just learning about the meat, but you know, as a respect to both my wife and her culture.
She's Korean.
She is. So we have a lot of Korean influence. Today's lunch special, for instance, is the Korean short ribs, the LA galbi. And so there's all of this influence in the dishes that we put out there. And so we had, before the shop opened, visited South Korea to see her parents and her family. And so the first time I had really met her sisters, we were all sitting in the same room, and I was trying to communicate with my wife. And I said, "Excuse me, Mo?" And all three of them turned around and said, "Yes," because there's a generational thing. There's a piece of the name that all has to do with Mo. So my wife is Yan Mo. She has a sister that is In Mo, and she also has a sister that is Yun Mo. So
they're all Mo.
They're all Mo. Mo, Mo, Mo.
How do you distinguish when you're with them now? You do
full name.
Yan Mo.
But there's also there's a lot of you know, cultural names that I would refer to all of them as sister in Korean, and mm-hmm. they would refer to me as brother. We're actually going through it right now. My in-laws, after I leave here today, I go to the airport to pick up them who are coming in from Seoul, and my nephew will be coming with them. And so we were going over with the kids yesterday what, you know, the sort of pleasantries of how they'll interact with their cousin. It'll be fun.
How is your Korean?
Not conversational. Words, phrases. My background in theater comes in really, really well with regards to communicating with my in-laws, because there's a bit of charades that goes into it. Their English is much better than my Korean. They're pretty fantastic with that. But we get along and understand each other perfectly, even though we're speaking very sporadically to each other.
Talking to Kevin McCann of McCann's Meats in Rochester. It's the first in our Summer of Food series of conversations here on Connections. And later this hour, we're going to have a chance to talk to a man who is the captain of the American team, the American Butchers team, that is going to compete next year at the International Butchers Challenge in Sacramento, California. Kevin is one of, I counted nine. Is that right? A team of nine?
So there are six of us that will compete.
Yep.
There's an alternate. And then there is a young butcher and an apprentice butcher that will both compete. And then there's our team organizer, Tia. So there's actually, if you count all of us, there's 10.
There's 10.
Six of us that will actually compete in the main event.
I mean, we're talking about a national team, and Kevin McCann from Rochester, one of them. And we're going to get to that later this hour. In fact, There's something going on at the shop this weekend? What's going on at the shop?
So it's a little miscommunication. It's actually not this weekend. It's going to be July 27th
when Danny comes out.
Was that
your fault or mine, by the way?
A little bit of everything involved. Mostly mine. But
you're so kind.
I don't mind you sharing
that.
It was
mine.
That's great.
It was mine.
So when Danny comes out, we're going to have a great time. We're going to have a interactive whole pig breakdown where people who would like to come out, free for everybody, out on the patio, we're going to break a pig down into the various pieces that you would use for grilling, for barbecue, for all kinds of fun cooking over the course of the summer and early fall, taking questions, explaining where cuts come from, why you cook them the way that you do. And then we're going to auction off everything that we cut down as a means of raising money for the team. It takes a lot to bring all of the members of the team to travel to one spot to practice. It takes a lot of money to get all of the materials together to practice. So, getting all that cash together is a goal of ours.
So let me just say that I think it really is admirable that, number one, your squeamishness gets cured up on the day, gets sort of wiped out on the day that you're really understanding sort of the sacredness, that this is an animal that is going to lose its life, and we're going to try to honor what that means and consume as much of the animal as possible and to treat that with respect. And now, if we're going to be eating animals in this society, to try to understand all of it and what it is. So it's a really cool opportunity with your captain coming in later this month. It's July 27th.
July 27th.
That is a Saturday.
It is a Saturday, 1 p.m. at the shop.
All right, 1 p.m. at McCann's Meats in the South Wedge if you want to mark your calendar. Saturday, July 27th, 1 p.m. I'm sure you'll have a crowd. That'll be a really, I think, educational experience. And in a moment, listeners, we're going to kind of walk through different cuts of meats because I was reading something that I'd never heard of, the Noah's Ark rule. We're going to get back to that in just a second. Give us a little bit of your path post-CIA then that led you to Rochester here.
Sure. I worked for a meat packer in Manhattan called DeBragge & Spittler, one of the preeminent sources of protein in all of New York City and the tri-state area. Left there, ran Pastabilities in Syracuse for about a year, had fun cooking with them. Went back down to New York and cooked for M. Wells, for a chef by the name of Hugues Dufour, an absolutely insane individual, but who has a huge stamp on my thoughts about food. And then did a wonderful apprenticeship with one of the first craft butchers that's out there by the name of Fleischer's, where I really learned the whole animal, had apprenticed with butchers, had worked with butchers, had a background as a cook, but then really kind of learned this backwards puzzle of how to get to all of the cuts to cook with and to create with from the whole thing down. And that's really where the whole thing kind of changed for me and was the major launching point for my wife and I to come here and open McCann's.
And where was that?
That was mostly in Kingston, New York, where their original location was, but it also included the location they have in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
So why Rochester?
So graduated SUNY Brockport with that degree in theater. Saw the impact that Kodak had had on the arts here in the city. So, whether it be sculpture or photography or film or, choir, music, so on and so forth, it had all been brought to this level where you don't necessarily see, especially in a lot of, tertiary cities like what Rochester is. And I saw how that bled out into the food and beverage scene. And especially with proximity to the Finger Lakes, it just felt like it was a no-brainer to me. So my wife, who didn't know Rochester from Albuquerque, we brought her out here. We went around and we ate and drank and got to know the city a little bit. She was excited, and so here we are.
Is there good Korean food here?
Sure, it's in my kitchen.
Besides, besides McCann's,
there's Sodom in Henrietta. There's Young's in Henrietta, I believe, as well. There's a couple of really nice grocery Korean groceries mm-hmm. where you can get ingredients to, experiment in your own home. But yeah,
and so Mo was on board.
Absolutely. without her, I'm not. My name is on the building, but I am not the boss. Let's be honest.
McCann's Meats in the South Wedge opened in June of 2015, and you've at least from my perspective, you've expanded the mission. I mean, you even have specialty coffee there now. I mean,
yeah, that kind of felt like a natural progression for us. You know, the beverage piece of what we were doing with craft beer. You know, with breakfast sandwiches, with the brunch service that we do on Saturdays.
Yeah, people go to actually eat there, not just pick up the food that they're going to eat at home.
100%. You know, people come in and they'll eat while they kind of shop. You know, they'll get a draft beer or a glass of wine, a Bellini, and they'll sort of shop around while they're waiting for their food to be cooked. They'll sit down, they'll pick out what they want, and then bring it home and feed their family.
You opened with how many employees in 2015?
I think we started with 8, maybe 9.
What do you have now?
14, 15, in that range. It takes a lot of hands, a lot of bodies. What we do is very intricate. There's just a lot of tasks to create all of the different products that we put into the case on a daily basis. And we really feel very strongly about the experience. We want to engage with the customer. We want to encourage questions. We want to give the answers. We want to give those pieces of education where it's required and where it's sought out, so that the person can leave feeling confident that they know what to do with a cut that they may never have worked with before. They know a little bit about perhaps a sausage, a piece of charcuterie, or a prepared food that they'd never heard of before. So that it's not just a transaction for us. It's a piece of community.
You're doing it. I mean, it really is remarkable what you're able to do in terms of not creating an intimidating presence, but creating an educational experience. And so let's talk about the animal itself here.
Sure.
Because I had not heard of what I guess is the Noah's Ark idea, the Noah's Ark rule.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's the thing that the customer has to sort of come to grips with first and foremost when they walk in, because, you know, I'll use tenderloin, filet. Customers walk in and they say, oh, I'd like to get a tenderloin. I'd like to get a filet mignon, one or two to bring home to feed my family. And the fact of the matter is once the two muscles are gone off of that one animal, there's none left. And so from an opportunity as a butcher shop, we have to be able to understand what goes into why the person made that decision. They're looking for something that's lean. They're looking for something that's tender. So what other cuts can we then advise that person to perhaps try? And you develop a rapport. That person that has tried this piece, they enjoyed it. They've diversified the menu that they'll enjoy at home that they can feed their family. So now they have something new.
All right, so walk me through it. If I'm the customer who walks in and says, well, of course, I'd like a little filet, and the Noah's Ark rule says there are only two muscles, and once they're gone, they're gone.
Sure.
Two of every muscle, and these happen to be gone. You're going to send me in what direction?
So the first thing I'll probably point you towards is the teres major. Now, this is a funny thing in and of itself also, because the teres major, there's also only two of, and each of those pieces is probably 12 ounces. So there's even less of that specific cut than there is a tenderloin. However, because it's lesser known, there tends to be one or two that are available. But again, lean, tender, extremely enjoyable.
Denver steak, Merlot steak, what's that?
Yeah, Denver, Chuck Flapp, super, super popular, probably one of the first bistro, and I use the word bistro as a means of saying, like, sort of, you know, extra value. The Denver, probably one of the first ones, sold out every week. Great marbling, great on the grill. Merlot steak, in the back of the knee, there's this cluster of muscles that are super tough, lots of sinew, but there's this one gorgeous velvety muscle in the center of it that is very similar to like a leaner flank steak. And just because we're a little tongue-in-cheek, we take that Merlot cut, which is what it's called, and we marinate it with Merlot, a little bit of whole grain mustard, a touch of honey, some fresh thyme and garlic.
Okay, so these are just small examples of what a lot of us have never heard of walking into your shop, right?
Yeah.
How many total cuts are there?
Yes. the beautiful thing is, even since I started cutting meat, there have been more and more muscles that have been singled out, right? That research has been done that butchers have been taking off of animals for, you know, centuries, that we're now separating and celebrating the individual qualities of that specific muscle. So the teres major that I brought up with the tenderloin, that was a super trendy, popular cut that, you know, broke through New York City and big cities. The flat iron, long before it became a staple at TGI Fridays, was, you know, another one of those style cuts. The same thing with the Denver, the Vegas strip that's out there now. Most recently, they decided to separate out what they're referring to as the Bonanza steak.
What's that?
The funny part is it's just the tip of the flat iron that stays attached to the scapula after you've broken the rib off of the chuck. So it's just this little 4-ounce cut that would otherwise just go into ground beef. And they said, you know what? It's great as a flat iron steak. We might as well take that and market it as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, how much do you think the average well, I don't know if I say average customer, because your customers, especially the regular clientele, gets to know the cuts a little bit more. But in terms of the whole animal, how underutilized is the whole animal historically in this country? Not in your shop, but historically.
Well, let's put it this way. So let's say that we have an 800-pound hanging carcass. You know, you're typically going to see a 60% yield off of that of saleable meat, you know. So 800-pound carcass, let's say it's a 600 pounds of saleable meat, much of that which is actually bone-in, short ribs and the bone-in ribeye, bone-in strips, so on and so forth. Of that 600 pounds, 300 pounds at least is ground beef. So you run into a scenario of the general public doesn't understand just how much ground beef is on each cow. And so, you know, for a whole animal butcher shop like us, it comes down to utilization. That's why we make not just hamburger patties or meatballs or meatloaf, but, you know, why we make beef salamis or why we make hot dogs or bologna or the mortadella or these other utilization through recipe aspects of being able to use what would otherwise be just ground beef.
What is in your hamburger patties?
So you get a lot of this foodie, quote unquote, that comes in and they say, oh, I've got this recipe, this blend that this celebrity chef through a magazine or through the TV show that I was watching, they said, I've got to use these specific cuts to make the perfect burger patty. And what that is more or less trying to artificially manufacture through commodity, you know, factory farmed meat that has less flavor. They're trying to artificially recreate flavors and textures that I can get naturally just by taking the pieces left on the animal that aren't steak or roast, that are either a beautiful blend of the more flavorful, less tender, and the more tender, less flavorful. So you have a nice 80-20 blend, leaned fat, of a nice coarse ground, fun to eat burger.
And it's coming from what part of the animal?
All of it.
Coming from everywhere.
Comes from all over. So, you know, people come in and say, well, I was told chuck, and I was told shank, and I was told short rib, and I was told brisket, and I was told this, that, and the other thing. And there's pieces of all of that that end up in our trim that goes into ground beef. But the one thing that I can tell people that to me means a lot is when you buy ground beef, whether it's in patty form or just bulk from our case, you can understand and know that it came from one animal that was grown within 60 miles of Rochester that is hormone, antibiotic, and steroid free. And that, you know, it was ground fresh at least that day, if not just minutes prior to your purchase. And the freshness of the grind, the quality of the animal that went into it, that's what makes the big difference.
The average customer or the customer asks the most for which cut of meat?
It certainly is beef over pork and chicken and everything else. ribeyes are super popular. Strips are super popular. Tenderloins are super popular. What I find the most gratifying is these bistro cuts that I kind of discussed, these opportunities for people to broaden their horizons. These are what people are now starting to come in and ask for by name.
Which takes one or two times at least trusting you.
Yeah.
And then coming back and saying, that's what I want. That's when you know we're building a clientele with real knowledge.
And my favorite, and this happened just yesterday, is when parents come in with their kids. And then very often what will happen is the kids, while the parents are shopping, they're looking for what's interesting. And so the kids will end up on the stools that are at the counter next to where the butcher blocks are. And so they're watching us cut. They're watching us break muscles off of carcass, or they're watching us trim muscles to then cut into steaks. Mm-hmm. And they ask all of these wonderful questions, and they're engaging, and they want to know where their food comes from. Maybe not necessarily in that exact specific term, but they're intrigued, and so they ask questions, and so then they come in and they tell, the parent will come in and say, well, my daughter said she'd really like a Denver steak because she saw you trim it last time she was here.
Cool.
Yeah.
How often do you get complaints?
Complaints happen. It's part of food.
I mean, cutting the meat in front of people, butchering in front of people.
Almost never.
Almost never.
Almost never. You brought up veganism or vegetarianism. We have customers who come in who, I'll say, what can I get you today? And that person will very quickly say, well, it's not for me, it's for my family. I'm a vegan or I'm a vegetarian. However, my family isn't, and they like meat, and I just appreciate the way that you source your meat. And so therefore, if I'm going to feed that to my family, I'd like it to be that.
Okay, fair enough. Now, when you say local, local to you means within 60 miles?
That's correct.
Is that an arbitrary barrier that you set?
It's what was very easy to accomplish. When I was in New York and, there was quote unquote local animal, and this is, I believe, what you're trying to get to, local to a lot of these places meant 250, 300 miles because that's as close as they could get to it. But for us, when I was in New York, I saw a lot of farms and animals that were coming from these farms that were coming from central and western New York. So the names of these towns were very familiar to me. So when we were coming back towards Rochester, it was all here already. I just had to go seek it out.
You want to shout out at least one or two of the names?
Sure. Autumn's Harvest Farm down in Romulus.
Them.
Yeah.
I know
the Youngman brothers out in just east of Ontario in Wolcott. They're great.
Yeah, and Autumn's Harvest has got to be right on that 60-mile border, but they're absolutely local. That's a Finger Lakes farm that is really renowned for great stuff.
100%.
Fair treatment of animals. Are we going to look back in future generations and be embarrassed about how we treated the cows that we ate in particular, or the pigs or the animals that we ate?
I think that's true about lots of different things as we continue to develop as a society, as people. We kind of look back and say, well, thank goodness we figured this all out and we're here. But like everything, it's a learning process,
But here we are in 2019. You've become an institution in Rochester in just 4 years. And you have set values for what you expect from the farms you work with, from where the animals are slaughtered, and then how you are trying to waste as little as possible. And you're introducing your customers to new cuts that they've never heard of, and they're coming back and asking for it. But we still have massive industrial facilities. Mm. Most people are eating meat that is, they know very little about. And I think that is starting to change. And we'll talk about that with our guest after the break here coming up in a moment. But do you think we ought to continue to ask more questions and at least demand different things when it comes to the animals we eat?
100%. A lot of the, I don't want to call it propaganda, but the information that gets out there that people who will trend in the anti-meat sort of end of things. They'll quote you statistics and they'll bring up facts that they've heard or read. And a lot of that is, it's taking into account only these factory farm scenarios, so they'll say that, red meat is 100% of red meat is carcinogenous, right? Well, that's true of certainly factory farms, but they'll say that beef is responsible for all of the the problems with our environment, with problems with the atmosphere, and certainly methane that comes from factory farms that are raising beef aren't helping. However, saying that that's the only problem is like me telling you that well water is 100% carcinogenous, but the only testing that I did came from a well that was underneath a nuclear power plant. It just isn't the whole story. You know, the whole story is much more nuanced than that. There are great farming practices that are out there. There are great farms out there that are benefiting the environment as a whole. Grasslands are a fantastic carbon sink. You know, they nitrogen sink. They will improve the quality of air just as much, or if not more, than, you know, temperate forest.
Now, before we bring in our guest, Danny Johnson, who's the captain of your American team,
yeah,
one more quick question that I want to squeeze in here before we turn to Danny. You've lost 115 pounds in what amount of time?
A little bit over a year and a half.
Just over a year and a half.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Amazing. It's been a lot of work. My wife and I have done it together. She has also been losing weight. She's been, you know, running 5Ks, 10Ks, you know, half marathons. She's got a whole marathon coming up. She's actually running a half marathon on Saturday somewhere.
In Hamlin?
That could be.
I may see her there.
There you go. She'll be wearing a Team Meatheads tank top if you see her. But, you know, we got together with a personal trainer by the name of Chris Ryan, and between individualized workouts, between watching what we eat, and sort of finding this sustainable lifestyle change in something that isn't just numerically goal-oriented, like I want to get to this specific weight, but instead finding something that is continuously going to build on this fitness, on this health benefit.
But did you eat less meat?
No, I eat more meat. Right now, I eat probably more meat than I ever have. And that's, I'm also lifting heavier than I ever have. And so I'm trying to not lose the muscle that I'm gaining in the gym. And I continue to lose weight. I drop body fat and add muscle mass, and you know, my joints continue to feel better. My energy level is great. My brain function is fantastic.
But what's the main way that you lost the weight? If people say, what is it? What did you cut or what did you add?
At the end of the day, it's all the equation, right? It's calories in versus calories out. So you certainly diet is going to be a huge, huge piece of it. But the impetus of going to the gym certainly helps you with regards to keeping track of what you're eating. What you can track, you can change. So you work really hard in the gym and you're super tired when you're done, and you kind of have this, oh man, woe is me thing. And then when you go to grab a candy bar or something like that, you go, you know what, I really don't need that. But I quit drinking 2 months ago. That's a lot of empty calories that I don't put into my body anymore. I'm not saying that drinking is good, bad, or anything in between.
Just saying what works for you.
But it's what, and nothing that I'm doing is 100% right for anybody either, you know. But the only thing I can say is that there is a sustainable way for each person to find a way to better their own health and to better their own fitness level.
Let's take our only break of the hour. We're with Kevin McCann, the owner and butcher of McCann's Meats in the South Wedge of Rochester. And Kevin was named to the national team, one of 10 Americans who are going to be part of this team. And they've got an international competition in Sacramento, California in September of 2020, an International Butchers, the World Butchers Challenge. We're going to talk to their team captain, who's on the line with us, who's after our only break. And we'll talk about an event that's coming up at McCann's later this month as well. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections. It's been 50 years since the Apollo 11 moon landing, and we discuss what it took for the U.S. to meet John F. Kennedy's goal. What kind of technology did we need to develop, and what did we learn from the mission? Our guests share the legacy of the moon landing and discuss the current state of the space program and research. Friday on Connections. The This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A Rochesterian, Kevin McCann, is going to be part of the World Butchers Challenge in September of 2020 in Sacramento, California. And the national team captain is Danny Johnson from Taylor's Market, who is on the line with us. He's a 1982 graduate of the Oregon Meat Cutting School, and he's got some very interesting thoughts about, well, what a good butcher should be. And he's on the line with us now. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time. Now, when did you meet Kevin McCann? When did you meet Danny?
I met Danny in person when I went out to do the final tryout for the team. We spoke once or twice on the phone prior to that, but I knew of him from keeping track of the 2018 team and from watching their competition in Belfast, Ireland. But we met for the first time then.
Belfast, Ireland in 2018, 2020. It's going to be in Sacramento, California. Danny, tell us a little bit about what the competition is and what it highlights.
So the competition, I always like to say it's kind of like Iron Chef on steroids. It's super, super visual. So you have six-man teams, six people. There's women and men involved. And you have 3 hours and 15 minutes to create a theme display, which would be appealing to the public, which entitled makes you want to cut a half beef, a half hog, a whole lamb, and five chickens, and requires you to make three types of gourmet sausages. Then you want to display this in an eye-appealing manner and use everything. And it's frantic. It's fun. You see these whole carcasses hanging at the very beginning. And at the end, you get these beautiful displays of meat and value-added products. It's gorgeous. It's a lot of fun. That's the easy part.
Who are the Americans up against?
There's 16 countries coming, so let's see if I can remember them all. I'll go by how it was in Belfast. So the winner was Ireland. Second place was New Zealand. Third was Australia. Then it was England. Then France. We were sixth. I believe Greece was seventh, Italy was eighth, Germany was ninth, Brazil was 10th, South Africa was 11th,
and then
Bulgaria was 12th. Yeah. Then the new countries are Mexico, Canada, Wales. I'm not sure how they snuck in. And I'm missing
one. You're missing just one. You got almost all 16.
Trying to figure out what the last one is. So, it might come. Oh, Iceland.
Iceland. So that's September of 2020. And Kevin, do you, will you practice and sort of train for it?
We're ramping right up here. So starting in the end of August, going into September, we'll get together every month for about 4 days and practice this run. You know, we've just about got to the point where we know everything that we want to try to get off of these animals. So at this point now, it's practice that run, do it as many times as possible so that when it's game time, it's just muscle memory. There's nothing new. All you're doing is executing.
I got to say, I mean, just as someone who's hearing about this and learning about this competition, I have an appreciation because it's about utilization of the whole animal and not wasting. And yes, these are the best butchers in the world, but there's something we all can learn from that, from not being scared of certain cuts. I mean, there are certain cuts that people, Kevin, when they walk into your shop, they go, I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want.
I mean, sure,
certain
awful, yeah, tongue, cheeks, people, you know, little sort of hang-ups people have in their brain about certain things. But then, you know, you give them something, you make a dish, you feed them our breakfast burrito on Saturdays from the braised beef cheeks. They go, oh, God, this beef is amazing. What is it? Oh, it's cheek. Never thought I would have liked that. Okay, so there you go.
Yeah. And why don't you tell people one more time what's coming up on Saturday, July 27th with Danny?
Sure, yeah. Dan's going to come into town, and we're going to have a really great opportunity. People ask us for classes and demos and things all the time that we just really don't have the space for. So this is a really cool opportunity to have that sort of interactive experience as we break down a whole hog, so we can talk about sort of grilling and barbecuing and sausage making and the way to utilize this animal in all kinds of different creative ways, you know, answer questions, talk about why we're doing what we're doing. And then we're going to put this all together into various different packages and auction it all off so that, you know, the people who are in attendance can take pieces of this home, enjoy this meat, kind of tell their friends and family about it as they feed them. And all of that money goes towards funding the team as we make our run at the 2020 World Butcher Challenge.
Danny, we'll look forward to seeing you here. And before I let you go, the Butchers Guild website in their description of your work says that that you're encouraged by growing interest in whole carcass butchery, an art form which was nearly lost due to mainstream grocers. You really think this country was losing an appreciation in an art of whole carcass butchery?
Yeah, I really do. I started on July in this business on July 4th, 1982. And I was trained as a whole carcass butcher, and then I seen it kind of go away. We've always done it that way here at Taylor's. And now there's been this renaissance in the past 10, 15 years. And it's great. I love to see, you know, some of these young guys get into it. And we're constantly teaching, educating. That's the whole purpose of the World Butcher Challenge, is to educate people about what we do and how we can use these whole animals, and nothing goes to waste.
We'll look forward to seeing you here in Rochester on Saturday, July 27th at McCann's at 1 p.m. And good luck to the American team next year. Thanks, Danny. Thanks for taking the time to call the program.
Thank you.
Danny,
have a good day.
Danny Johnson's the captain of Team America in the World Butchers Challenge that Kevin McCann of Rochester will be competing in. Let me read a tweet from Andy who says, listening to the conversation with McCann's Meats and salivating over here, I had no idea a discussion of breaking down animals could be so fascinating and hunger-provoking. That comes from Andy. Well, you know where to find Kevin. He also says congrats to Kevin on his weight loss. I've been working to drop some weight. I've lost 10-plus pounds over the last 3.5 months. It's not difficult. You just moderate what goes into your body, and you get more active.
That's
the secret for me.
Absolutely.
So before the hour's out here, two quick questions for you.
Yeah.
I love the bulgogi there.
Sure.
And that comes
from you and everybody else.
That comes from your wife's side. You said that is just what? What is the bulgogi?
It is it's a shaved steak. It's sort of like the preeminent Korean barbecue item, right? It is a shaved steak that is marinated. The base of it is soy sauce, sesame oil, scallion, and garlic. And other than that, if you want to know what it is, you're going
to... Mo told me that you could tell us.
Yeah, you'd have to really convince me of that one. She's told everybody that works for us, you got to work for the company for at least 10 years before she'll divulge any of those secrets. And we've been married for 5, and I still don't know. So,
and the bulgogi, which is addictive stuff from McCann's Meats. And so for people who are going to be preparing food at home, they pick it up at McCann's, what's the most common mistake people make?
You know, I don't think people make mistakes. I think it's, you
know.
Oh,
come on. Don't be that
guy. No,
no.
I mean, you're going to eat.
I'll give you a mistake I made.
Sure.
I'm not all that good at removing silver skin on a pork tenderloin, and I cut too much of the actual muscle.
Well, then that's the fault of the butcher who sold you the pork tenderloin, because you shouldn't have any silver on it when it gets to you. You should be able to.
I'm not talking about coming
grill.
From McCann's. I'm talking about if I pick up a quick one at a grocery store.
Well, then the mistake you made
skin.
Was going to the wrong place to yeah. buy your pork tenderloin.
See, I knew
Come
that.
Come see us at 739 okay. South Clinton Avenue.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough. But okay. Do we flip our burgers too much? Do we?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, let the grill do its work. Let the pan do its work. Yeah. I mean, don't fidget with it. You know, let the heat give it a good color. Work. Let the tool do the work.
If you are serving in a restaurant and it's McCann's Meats, full service restaurant, someone's ordering in the restaurant one of your steaks of any kind and wants it well done.
Want ketchup on it. They ask for A1.
Are you going to try to dissuade them?
I've got your money. I don't care. It's fine. You can eat your steak however you like to eat it.
Well
I'm
going
to eat my steak how I like
well
to
done.
Eat it. Well done. You can put it underneath, put it on the block of your car and let it sit there for 5 hours. I don't mind.
But do you taste less of the meat if it's well done?
I would think so. But then there's ways that the flavor will manifest itself from rare all the way through to well that either agrees with your palate or doesn't.
See, I've stayed away from politics, but I wanted to ask you if this president could lose your vote because he likes his steaks well done.
That would not be the reason that this president would lose my vote.
Fair enough.
As I said, he can eat his steak however he wants.
McCann's has been open for more than 4 years now in the South Wedge, and this is the summer of food. I've greatly enjoyed our first conversation with Kevin McCann and with the team captain. Danny is coming in on Saturday, July 27th.
Boom.
That is later this month. So if you want to mark your calendar, it's a couple weeks from, 16 days from now.
There you go.
It's, later this month, 1 o'clock for a demonstration and then a little food auction.
Boom.
There at McCann's.
Help us. Help us get this team together, get the gold, bring it back to Rochester.
Thanks for being here. Congratulations on being part of the American team.
Thank you.
And thanks for the knowledge that you spread in this community.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Kevin McCann joining with us on the Summer of Food. Our thanks to everyone working with us, including Josephine, volunteering for us today, Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.